News in the Morning 4 times an hour. Thank you so much for listening. And we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm very excited to be speaking today on the morning show with two folks from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside who are participating in a really exciting program there now in its third year. It is a summer program, the Alternative Historical Narrative Program, which reaches out to high school students and high school teachers as well, and to give all of the participants a much richer sense of our country's history. Joining us today is, first of all, Dr. Peggy James, who is Dean of the College of Social Sciences and Professional Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, and also with us, Dr. Edward Schmidt, who is an Associate Professor of History. Dr. James is someone who probably takes primary coordination responsibilities for this particular program. Dr. Schmidt is teaching in the program this summer for the first time. Dr. Schmidt's actually been at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside for 20 years, teaching an array of courses, most of which are rooted in American history and in particular aspects of American history which are sometimes neglected as we tell our story, our country's history. So we're going to be talking about, in particular, what has been going on this summer with the Alternative Historical Narrative Summer Program, and what's gone on in the past, and the ways in which they hope what is learned from this program will go with these students and with these teachers into their future studies and future endeavors. Dr. Peggy James, Dr. Edward Schmidt, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Good to have you here. And I have to say, as I was reading up on this, it got me really, really excited, in part because I think it's great that such a thing exists, and also because I think it can be the launch pad for a really intriguing conversation about how we can best understand our own history. So, Dr. James, we should begin with you with a little bit of an understanding of how this program was created 3 years ago, and in a sense, what specific need was it designed to address, or maybe what void was it designed to fill?
Well, the program is actually a three-year program funded through the Department of Education. So we received a $1.4 million grant to offer this alternative historical experience for high school students and for high school teachers. The intent, essentially, was to give a different perspective on the same history, but obviously when you look at it from a different point of view, you have a different understanding of it. And we've also found that it's easier and more beneficial to learn from history when you see yourself in it. And so many times with a majoritarian view, whatever it might be, is that people who are not in that majority might not see their particular position in history and then might not really be interested or gain anything from it.
Mm. So just to put it in probably fairly simplistic terms, but let's say a black youngster looking through a history book and seeing nothing but white faces.
Indeed.
Is going to probably feel like this is someone else's history and not my own history.
Exactly. And an example of that, I think, is from our first year with our focus on Native Americans, is that we had more than one high school student tell us that they thought all Native Americans were dead. Mm. And it's simply because they had learned about them only in terms of in terms of the past, and thought basically there were no longer any Native Americans alive, which I think is gives you an idea of how important it is to actually make those connections.
Right. So as you were describing it, you are in your third summer, and the first summer tackled this topic in one way and the second in another.
Correct.
And this Thursday's in another. Is that the way it is designed to be done, whoever undertakes this, or was that a choice you specifically made at Parkside?
Well, that was a choice that we made when we wrote our proposal. So the Department of Education simply looked for uncovering American history that connected it to place-based experiences. And we decided to actually look at alternative narratives rather than the usual one. So our particular program is different than any other one that's been funded by the Department of Education.
Interesting. So in other words, there's a whole lot of leeway.
Yes.
And this is the direction you decided to take it. So it does not necessarily need to be something that would focus on African Americans or Native Americans. That is a choice that you made at Parkside.
That is correct.
And I've already kind of let the cat out of the bag, but nevertheless, spell out for our listeners how you have marched through these three summers.
So the first year, we did the Native American experience and addressed history from the point of view of how Native Americans had experienced it, with the idea of also relating it to present-day struggles. And the second year, it was the second year that we were going to do African American history. We took a COVID break. Mm. And so last year, we did the Hispanic experience and did a place-based experience in El Paso, where students could actually see the wall and talk to some people on the ground there. And this third year is the African-American experience. And this year, actually tomorrow, we're going to St. Louis.
And we'll talk about that in just a moment, about some of the interesting things you are going to be seeing there. So how is the summer structured? And I do know that it's roughly 17 days long, so it's a whole lot of ground to cover in a relatively short amount of time, but basically, how is that time spent? How much of the day and in doing what?
Students come in from 9 to 4 every day, so it's a fairly intensive experience. And it's a combination of lectures, guest speakers, events, activities, two place-based experiences. So as I said, we'll be going to St. Louis for 4 days, and we've also been to Milwaukee to the Black Holocaust Museum. And so it's really a combination of quite a number of different activities. Professor Schmidt actually takes the brunt of the responsibility for the learning material, the lectures, the assignments, and making sure that people actually are learning what they should be doing.
And as we said earlier, this is designed for high school students and high school history teachers as well.
Yes.
Are they essentially in the classroom together, or are they having separate experiences?
Well, this is where it gets kind of difficult for Ed logistically, because there are times when they are in the classroom together, especially if we're having a guest speaker, and so both of them come together. But there's also, obviously, the teachers are learning about this from a different perspective than the students, and so we do have different approaches to it, different classrooms. So Ed often finds himself going from high school students to high school teachers, which I think might be a little bit disconcerting in terms of your teaching approach.
I suppose. So how dizzying is that to be shifting back and forth between two different audiences like that?
It's been less dizzying than I feared, actually. The dynamic has really been good. The students are all coming to this topic from different places, different, levels of knowledge. The teacher's the same. But the wonderful thing is everyone who's here who's taking time out of their July, and we've had wonderful weather, they're here because they want to be here. And so, that's the best situation any instructor can ask for.
Dr. James, you were telling me before we went on the air that the high school students who pass get college credit, and the teachers who pass get credits as well.
That's correct. The high school students will get 3 credits of college history, and the high school teachers will get 6 graduate credits towards a Master of Arts, if they would want to do that. So some teachers have actually participated in this for 3 years, and they are coming out of this with 18 credits. And wow. Since a typical master's is usually 30 credits, they're more than halfway there, and it didn't really, well, it cost them their time, and it cost them their effort, which is a lot, but it didn't cost them any money.
Wow, that's really great. For those of you just joining us, we're speaking today on The Morning Show with Dr. Peggy James, Dean of the College of Social Sciences and Professional Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, our neighbor to the north. And also with us, Dr. Edward Schmidt, who is an associate professor of history at Parkside and who has done a lot of the teaching in this third summer of this alternative historical narrative summer program at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. Before we dig into a few specifics, I'm really curious to hear from each of you about your own kind of life's journey in terms of history, becoming interested in history, wanting to teach history, and so on. So let's start with Dr. Schmidt. So first of all, back as a young person, is this already something that had sort of grabbed you by the throat, or did it happen a little later that this became a passion of yours?
It's interesting because I started, our history majors at Parkside, I've started asking them to write their own autobiography of themselves and to track their interests, right?
Yeah.
Because I think it's helpful for us to understand what we care about, why we care about it, because you can then apply it in all different, scenarios as you go forward in life. Not all of our history majors go on to teach. Mm. So valuing history and seeing the ways that it can be applied, it made sense to sort of track back what is it that makes you passionate about it. And for me, it did start early. I always liked old stuff. Maybe I was a weird kid. But and interestingly, too, thinking about for this class and emphasizing particular aspects of African-American culture, I thought about what really drew me to learning about the African-American experience, and it was music. I found my parents' old Ray Charles albums and Harry Belafonte, and humor also. Was drawn to African-American comedians from a very young age. And as I went through high school, took classes, and then decided to be a history major in college, over time there became much more appreciation among scholars for the value of culture. It used to be seen as, sort of it would add color to serious historical studies where you would focus on politics or military history. That has been the growth area in understanding social history is culture, the power of culture, and especially popular culture at the mass level. If a lot of people find something interesting or want to spend their free time doing it, that matters, and it tells us something about a society or a community. And so I've just sort of followed that trail down the road, and it's contributed to my research, the courses that I teach, and just as a way of trying to connect to the students in this class, I told them my story and how it was. It starts from these experiences when you're young, So that's kind of been the journey.
I like that very much, and I love the idea of asking these young people to trace their own journeys as well about what brings you here to want to learn more about our history. How about you, Dr. James?
Well, I'm not a historian. I'm a political scientist. But I think I share with probably every professor who does their research is that what excites us is discovery. Mm. And that's why we do research, to find out things. And there's a book called The Archaeology of Knowledge. And that's what I find is interesting about history, is that if you look for the backstories, the stories that aren't the ones that are sort of the primary ones that you hear, that's discovery. And every time you discover something like that, your understanding of the world gets a little bit more complex, but deeper. And this, I think, is what excites me about looking at different interpretations, different explanations of maybe similar events, but that meant different things for different people.
Hmm. When I could see how really in the realm of political science that is played out again and again in very exciting ways. Well, terrific. Well, let's take apart what has been happening in this third summer of the Alternative Historical Narrative Program. So first of all, Dr. Schmidt, you've done, it sounds like, the lion's share of the actual teaching. Were you responsible for assembling what would amount to sort of a plan of action, a curriculum for these 17 days?
I guess ultimately, but fortunately I've had, you know, Peggy has been the experienced hand, having gone through this twice and seeing, you know, how to engage students in a short period of time with a topic they may or may not be particularly familiar with. So, and our other professionals in the college have been wonderful too, Gia and Denise, who helped us, you know, handle all the logistics of how do we get students into different spaces and have these different experiences. So definitely not all on me. But I guess thinking through how to make things fit together in a short period of time, that's been, I think, the most challenging and interesting part of this. Having gone through the last couple of years with COVID and thinking about how to introduce information in different ways, different venues, this is another level of that. And fortunately, we're together all day, and so that's been a wonderful thing that I'm not used to. Mm. But I have been up at night a few times thinking about, okay, is this going to get us through the day? And fortunately, so far, I think it's been pretty good.
Right. I'm curious to... How do I ask this? This has to do with your skin color.
Right.
And the fact that that you are standing in front of these students as a white male.
Right.
Talking about the place of African Americans in our country's history and their experience and so on. I'm just curious, what are the challenges for you in terms of doing that? And what have you thought about in terms of framing this educational journey with you at the head of it? I ask that because I think a lot of people who are teachers now think about that in a way very much differently from maybe 20 years ago, when mm-hmm. a question like that would maybe have not even occurred mm-hmm. to anybody to ask.
Right. It's a central question, so thank you for asking about it. And it's one that I've wrestled with from the very first time that I taught African American history 19 years ago. And I think what I've come to through a lot of discussion with colleagues and thinking about this and wrestling with it is the best approach is just be honest with the students and share. You know, I don't feel entirely the most appropriate vehicle to be teaching this, given my own, you know, different life experiences. And I even say, you know, maybe it would be better if someone African-American was teaching the course. But I also have learned a lot just in terms of a professional historian and thinking about the ways that the material that you're presenting can be what is the center, not the voice of the professor. So everything that they're looking at in the course and listening to is coming from the perspective of African Americans themselves. Every video that we watch, you know, the narrators are African American historians and scholars or historical figures themselves. The music and cultural examples, and really the focus that I've really wanted to put front and center is not what white America has done to African Americans, but how African Americans have amazingly, in many cases, been able to build lives and make progress in the face of that. What is their agency in all that? And it's remarkable when you really start studying it, if you haven't been exposed to it. And even just preparing for this summer class, I ran across some new research focusing on the 19th century, which isn't my area of expertise, but really has given a lot more focus to the ways that even in the face of abolitionism, when there were prominent white abolitionist organizations and leaders working with African Americans, they were working at themselves and coming together in conventions under, you know, sometimes physical threat, to make plans, to operate as citizens in this republic, even though they did not have the political power that they constitutionally were supposed to have. So I think that has been where I've landed on teaching African American history is trying to make that the forefront of how students engage it, not me.
Mm. Well, and your answer is also helpful in that it reminds us that this summer is not your first time at the rodeo. I mean, that you have been throughout your teaching career at Parkside teaching courses essentially about this topic. And so this is something with which you've been wrestling, I assume, for a long, long time, not just for the summer of 2022.
I have, but it's so interesting. As you know, all you and all of our listeners are aware, I mean, in some ways we've been paying more attention to Black history as a society than we ever have in the last couple of years. And there's an urgency to it that there has not been. And that's really helpful in the classroom, but it also adds an extra dimension of, I don't want to say pressure, but definitely responsibility for, you know, guiding conversations in a way that is going to be productive, and in which all students coming to this again from very different places, maybe in their experience, feel like they can learn and contribute to the conversation.
Hmm. Anything you want to add, Dr. James?
I just think that what Ed said about giving students a sense of agency is really what the program is all about. It is designed to let them know about history of marginalized folks that isn't just about being victims, but to also look about how they managed to resist, how they managed to contribute. And they did contribute a great deal to our history. Oftentimes, we sort of gloss over that, I think, because, well, there's lots of other things to talk about, and we simply put them in as little footnotes. And what this does is take those footnotes and make them the story.
Right.
And I think that that's probably the main goal of the entire program.
Right. You're pointing to something that I think is worth talking about, because sometimes this is approached in a way where it feels like it is a case of rewriting history versus highlighting aspects of our history that tend to be neglected. But and in my area of music, for instance, that would be if somebody was teaching a course on the history of the symphony and decided that the history of the symphony, well, we better make sure we have the Sinfonias of Maria Martinez, and we better have talked for a while about the Gaelic Symphony of Amy Beach, and, you know, and so on. I mean, these women who maybe composed noteworthy symphonies, but in the grand scheme of things, and regrettably so, were largely shut out of the kind of the overall professional life of music making. Mm-hmm. And so it's sometimes there's a tendency to try to rewrite that history as though that weren't true, as though those doors weren't closed, and that women were equal participants when, in fact, again, regrettably, they weren't. Mm-hmm. So that's one way to do it versus deciding, let's look at all of these neglected women composers who should have been in the mainstream, mm-hmm. but weren't. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if any of that makes sense in terms of what I laid out, but it's not that they're only just the two choices, but where does this fall in terms of the way you are trying to approach this whole matter?
Well, I think, again, Greg, you've really put your finger on a core question for all of education, right? We only have so many hours in a day. We only have so many days in a school year for the K-12 calendar or for universities. And so it always is kind of a pie chart, right, in terms of what, you know, resources are going to go to what topics. And that has to be an ongoing conversation. You know, the idea of kind of a core or a canon of knowledge in any field, there's a consensus that's built around that, but that also the conversation about that has to continue, particularly as society changes, as understanding changes. I think that's what makes education exciting, but it can also be troubling to people and threatening sometimes.
Right. Well, of course, the ongoing conversations about is the term critical race theory. Is that what we're talking about? That's sparks some very, very fiery debates, of course, over this. So where would you place what you are doing in the alternative historical narrative summer program? How would you place that within that other thing called critical race theory? Are they adjacent, not at all the same? Are they largely synonymous? What's the relation there?
Well, I guess I wouldn't. If you look at a real purist view of critical race theory, it might try and reconstruct history. And so it might deconstruct the majoritarian view and then tell it in a new way, almost as if the old history was not accurate. And I don't think that's what we're doing here. What we're doing is actually what you said about women composers, is we're adding more information, more perspectives. So it's sort of like, as I said, getting those footnotes that are there, because they are there, but because of time, because of interest, because of just how used to a majoritarian narrative we get, have been sort of there but not highlighted. And I think that's what we're doing. It's not necessarily that we're deconstructing anything. We're adding more information, more perspective. We're giving history more texture. Right?
That's a beautiful way to put it. I like that. Does that resonate with what you're thinking, Professor Schmidt?
Very much so. I think, you know, history, one of the great things about it is I think it's a really accessible discipline. And so kind of the constructs and the models, which are really important in the social sciences, because they can help us probe our understanding in new ways. Historians use those models to varying degrees, but I think there's also kind of a simplicity to thinking about what are the core kinds of human questions that we want to look at from the past. How did people build community? How did people try to improve their lives? And you know, I particularly for myself as a historian, I don't come at it from a theoretical framework. There's just been so much wonderful research that's been done in the last 50 years on African American history, that it's exactly what Peggy said. You know, in the space of textbooks that show up in K through 12 classrooms, you can't cover everything. And there, you know, we all are familiar with the debates at the local level over prioritizing information, and that's the way our society has been historically. It is decided at the local level, so there's variance across the country as to how that's approached. But our job as professional historians is to keep doing the research, keep accumulating that knowledge, and trying to broaden the understanding for people who aren't familiar with what that research is. And these are fundamentally human stories, right? And so what was life like for people in these very challenging situations? How did they do amazing things in the face of that, as individuals, as communities? And so I like to keep it simple in terms of thinking about approaching history. There's a lot to study, so the work is real. But in terms of critical race theory, it's not at the heart of the way I approach things, and it's about a different kind of lens of approaching thinking about the past, with you know, sometimes a different goal and sometimes very worthy purpose.
Your focus is 20th century, is that right?
Yes.
I mean, primarily. So this question is maybe not you're not the ideal target for this question, but nevertheless, I'm going to offer it to you. One question about specifically when we want to trace the African-American experience through our country's history, the fact that at least in some aspects of African-American history, that history has been preserved and passed on by different means than other parts of our history, and in many cases passed on orally versus set down in government documents or whatever it might be. What kind of a complication is that for a historian wanting to really understand this history better and to accurately share it with students today?
Yeah, there's been a great debate, you know, over the last, again, 50 plus years or so. Historians can be sort of slow moving in terms of thinking about new approaches to research, and we can be a little bit hidebound at times being attached to printed documents. But I think we've learned, you know, that the availability of sources is at the center, and communities that preserve stories, you know, there have been all kinds of examples where those stories have been validated by additional sources that eventually surface, even in the instance of, you know, stories that were preserved about Thomas Jefferson, perhaps fathering a child with Sally Hemings, one of the enslaved people at Monticello. You know, historians resisted that for a long time because it didn't fit their model of understanding the way Jefferson worked. And then along comes the technology of DNA evidence, and it pretty much makes the case clear that he had done that. And so we are much more open to understanding the power and the value of, you know, those sorts of oral narratives. And the other wonderful thing is that even though the black community, particularly in the 19th century, didn't have the kind of traditional sources like newspapers, which, you know, sort of the first draft of history, in many instances they didn't have those. We're starting to recover the early examples of those. Mm-hmm. And now with digitizing all of that material, we can start to accumulate it and get a much richer picture of what was going on in communities where that had been left out of archives in the past.
Right. For those of you just joining us, we're speaking with Dr. Edward Schmidt and Dr. Peggy James about the third and final summer of the Alternative Historical Narrative Summer Program at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, which has involved some 67 high school students, 18 high school teachers, history teachers, in an experience over the course of 17 days this particular summer, exploring African Americans within the narrative of American history and coming to understand that narrative better. So Dr. Schmidt, just talk us through where you have gone thus far this summer with this program, and then we'll talk about the big trip, which is coming up in the next few days.
Sure. So it's sometimes hard for historians not to stick to the timeline, but we can't cover it all in 17 days. So we really kind of tried to dive in and look at a few areas of African-American history. Again, looking at culture, we've looked at the ways that particularly music and humor have been empowering for African-Americans from, you know, the period of slavery, certainly on up to the present, ways that it helped them to navigate, you know, the challenges and the difficulties of daily life, the ways that stories that have been preserved and jokes that have been preserved from African-American history teach us about the ways that they, you know, told stories that ended up making fun of the slave master in a way that they didn't detect, that even the, you know, the slave master might laugh at, and certainly African-Americans had a ball considering after the fact. Music as uplifting, the spiritual. And then as we get into the 20th century, looking at the power of blues, ragtime, jazz, and rock and roll, that's been an area of focus that I think students have enjoyed. We've looked at the experiences of young people. We had on Friday, it was really pretty fun. We looked at the high school yearbook of Sumner High School, where we're going to visit in St. Louis, from 1952. And the students brought in their own yearbooks, and we made comparisons about what they saw, what we can learn from a high school yearbook. And I think that really engaged their sense of, you know, what did the world look like from an 18-year-old African-American's eyes in that moment in time. We've looked at aspects, again, of ways that they've tried to shape their world around them as citizens. These conventions that I mentioned before, there's a whole website and database that's being accumulated of research. These took place from 1830 into the 1890s at the local and the national level. Frederick Douglass spoke at least a couple of them, I think, and they outline with an agenda, these are the issues we're facing as a community. You know, they were in Texas, in Mississippi. Those issues are pretty clear what they would have been dealing with, but also in the Midwest and in the Northeast, and seeing who were part of those conventions, who were the speakers, who were the leaders in local communities that were invited. Some historians have even researched where people at those conventions ate. So you learn about kind of the logistics of bringing people together in a period where, again, mobility, we all have been made more familiar with, say, the Green Book in the 20th century. Well, think about traveling in the 19th century in the South, gathering, coming together to talk about how we're going to make our life better in the midst of this ocean of, you know, white supremacy. It's pretty fascinating to consider. So those are some of the things that we've had a chance to dive into.
Did you want to add anything? I saw you at one point getting real excited when he was talking about the yearbooks, Dr. James.
Well, I think this is what we try and focus on is getting experiences. So not necessarily, and as you hear, Dr. Schmidt is not standing up there lecturing and just giving people assignments. Is that we're teaching through sharing the experiences that have happened in history and things like the year. And I liked it very much because what it did was take a historical yearbook and compare it to the current one. And this is one of the goals of the program, is to actually get our students more civically engaged in today's activities. And we feel that if we can connect the historical experiences and say, well, you know, these things, this is how they relate to what's going on today, or of course in some instances these things are continuing to go on today, is that they can appreciate the connection between the past and the present.
Absolutely. I'm reminded of a trip that my wife and I took over New Year's for a wedding of a former student down in Little Rock, Arkansas. And so we had the experience of standing outside of Central High School, I think, which is where those dramatic events took place back in the mid-50s, when that high school was forcibly integrated, much to the consternation of many of the whites in Little Rock. And there's a beautiful museum right there where you can kind of learn a great deal about that. But it was amazing what a difference it made for us to be standing there and to be standing right there and seeing something with our own eyes that we had only seen in black and white photographs from more than half a century ago. And so I think I have a renewed appreciation for what you're talking about in terms of taking the students to places where history has played out. Before we talk about the trip to St. Louis that's coming up, what would be some of the other trips that have taken place as part of this program?
Well, in our first year, our place-based experience consisted of us going up to Red Cliff Indian Reservation, and we spent a few days with, we were hosted by Native Americans on the Indian Reservation. Students learned various sorts of activities, how to make a wigwam, and actually did these sorts of things, went through, there was storytelling, as Ed says, the power of stories, and it was very important in Native American legends. So we went up to northern Wisconsin and spent a few days on the reservation. And the second year we went to El Paso. That was a little bit more challenging in terms of the logistics, but we did go, and the students were able to see the sorts of things that they'd been learning about. So we went and we talked to some border guards who came and spoke with us. We went to the wall. We actually saw the sorts of things that we'd been reading about in our history books. And this year, we're going down to St. Louis. And again, you talk about the emotive power of a place-based experience. There's nothing that really can replace it. And this is why we remember so many of those things, because we don't remember the information as much as we remember the feeling. So we're going down to the Blues Museum. Ed mentioned the power of music. And so we'll actually be hearing some live performances of blues players there, a little bit of some authentic food, and going to the Ulysses S. Grant home, which also had a slave keeping quarters as well. And I'm visiting the Arch, visiting the St. Louis Arch, whose museum is just absolutely rich in terms of the experiences that went on in St. Louis as they were building it, in addition to a recreation of the Dred Scott trial. And so, again, students feel those sorts of experiences. And what we're doing for the teachers this year was a little bit different, is that we're bringing in technology. So usually the teachers also have a place-based class that goes along with this. This year, we're talking about how can you construct a place-based experience when it may not be possible to actually go there. So this year, we're working with the Oculus Quest, and teachers are looking at how to construct places virtually for their students, rather than rely. And in some cases, this is richer, because it's one thing, as you say, to go down to Central High School and imagine what happened there, but using a virtual constructed experience, you can actually recreate what happened there 50 or 60 years ago. And the power is just amazing. There's a great documentary that is in that is virtual called Traveling While Black, and it recreates exactly what Dr. Schmidt was talking about, is what it was like to travel in the 1950s if you were an African American. The experience is so real in those headsets that it actually makes you emotional. And that's what helps you remember, right? We always remember the things that we feel more than the things that we read about. Even, not always, but mostly.
Right, absolutely. What you were just saying reminds me of that magnificent book, The Warmth of Other Suns. And I got to interview the author of that. I can't think of her name now. It's blanking on me. But that idea, that exploration of the African-American diaspora.
Great migration,
from the South to the rest of the country. And reminds me that, I mean, not only does she talk on that whole issue about what it was like for these blacks migrating into other parts of the country and trying to navigate where was it safe for them to stay and eat and so on, but it also points to the fact that history is not just about when Marian Anderson sang at the Lincoln Memorial, that history is also full of, in a sense, quieter yet widespread events that unfold over the course of decades and so on. I suppose maybe this course is less about that and more about those kind of asterisks in history that you can highlight, or have you tried to tell some of these broader stories as well?
I think we've tried to do both and point to, you know, some of the signature moments that students may already be familiar with. But for example, we looked at the March on Washington, and students are familiar with Martin Luther King's speech, but instead we listened to Mahalia Jackson singing, and she was his favorite singer, and knew the power of what she brought when you had a gathering of people at a mass meeting in a church, or in this instance, the largest gathering, you know, during the movement on the Mall in Washington. So we've tried to bring both aspects of those experiences as best we can to what students are seeing.
Have you experienced any pushback or resistance from any of your students, if I can ask that frankly? I mean, only because, you know, sometimes you are talking with students, in a sense, probably kind of rewriting their understanding of things as they've been told before. Or has that not happened too much? Is this designed in such a way that it tends not to be terribly or overtly threatening to some of their preconceived notions?
No pushback from students or teachers. And that may, you know, be largely because they took the course because they want to learn more, and they're, you know, very open to new ways of rearranging the furniture of thinking about American history. But yeah, fortunately, there hasn't been. But, you know, every time I teach the course, I expect that those conversations could happen. And I welcome those, because we have to have those conversations, because we are, as a local, as a national community, we've seen when that breaks down how problematic it is. And just the idea of how, you know, the absence of awareness of the different perceptions of what happened in the past guides people's behavior in ways is ultimately going to be really counterproductive if we don't try to dig into this and have those conversations.
How different is it teaching these high schoolers in this limited time frame versus what you typically get to do, which is teaching college students? They're not that much older, but
they're
a bit older than high schoolers, and over the course of a whole semester. I should think it's two very different experiences for you.
It is, but not as different as I feared. Right? They are really engaged and really, you know, really bright. So, aside from the fact that it's a much longer stretch of time that we're together, they're college students in this class, and that's how it feels to me. You know, even as I'm reading their work, they have stepped up to where they're at that level.
Hmm. So, Dr. James, before we went on the air, one of the things you said is that one of your highest hopes is that those who participate in this are going to take this experience with them into their own futures, whatever that means for them. So Tell us more about what you hope the kind of the long-term ramifications of this experience can be for those who have participated in it.
Well, for the high school students, I want them to be excited about learning. And I think that having this sort of experience gives them a different perspective on what it's like to learn than in a regimented high school scenario. And of course, as Ed says, being treated like college students mean that there's a great deal of respect and trust that grows in this sort of a class, and I believe that they actually experience the joy of learning, whereas oftentimes in high school, I have to be there. And so I want them to come out of this with liking to learn and also being more civically engaged so that they can see that there's some history to what's going on today, and that if people didn't realize that today and didn't realize it 50 years ago, then it's still going to continue. And also we're hoping that students will want to go on to college, obviously. And we find that many of the students that participate in our program actually do apply to Parkside. For the high school teachers, what we're hoping is that they also begin to disseminate some of the information that they've learned in this class, and perhaps come up with different learning modules, perhaps a lesson plan that will include some of the material that they've learned and some of the ways of teaching it too, because that's part of that as well. And we've had some success with this. With our first year, a woman who participated in the program wrote back about 6 months later and said that she'd quit her job here and that had gone on to take a job teaching on an Indian reservation up north.
Wow.
Because she had some Native American heritage in her, and she decided that she needed to go back and she needed to actually work in that particular area. So that's a life-changing experience for her. And I think a number of our teachers are, they're all very interested, very open, and I want them to go back to their own schools, and I know they will, and keep this tradition alive, and keep teaching students the stuff that they've learned here.
Very good. Professor Schmidt, anything you want to add in terms of what you hope the ongoing ramifications of this will be?
I would echo what Peggy said, and I think for the teachers especially, it seems like it's been valuable for them to just have the space to talk about what it's like to teach these topics. And we have some educators who've been teaching African American history or African American studies for a period of, I think one teacher has been teaching for 20 years, and others are not even necessarily teaching social studies or history, but are thinking about ways that they might be able to incorporate it in even, science courses. And so having that conversation across subjects and disciplines and thinking about, again, how relevant this is to not just, test scores for students coming out at the end, or, even sort of building new curricula and what that, is as an accomplishment. I think just talking about how important this is for our community, for our nation, that's what I hope continues from this.
Excellent. We want to remind everybody, actually we're not reminding them, I think we're saying this for the first time, but on the 2nd of August, there is an opportunity for people, for the public actually, to come and see some of these students in action. Real quick, tell our listeners about that.
This is on the 2nd of August, on Tuesday in the afternoon. Our students are going to be hosting a poster walkthrough, and we have groups of students that are doing posters based on the conventions and conferences and organizations that were involved in history making in terms of the last 100 years or so. So they've taken a particular organization or group and are basically giving us more information about what they've done historically and what might be actually in the relevance to the present. So people are definitely invited. It's going to be in Molinaro Hall. And for any more information, they can call me, Peggy James, at UW Parkside.
Very good. And I know that there's a nice page of the UW Parkside website that also gives information just kind of in general about this alternative historical narrative summer program. It was really interesting to look that over. And it's been great today to talk about all that this program has entailed over the last couple of years. You're sad to see it end, I'm sure.
Well, we're talking about continuing it, and perhaps on a smaller scale, because it's an expensive program, but we're not necessarily ready to call it quits yet.
Very good. Well, I can understand why. It's exciting what it has offered to those who have participated. Dr. Peggy James, Dean of the College of Social Sciences and Professional Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, and Dr. Edward Schmidt, Associate Professor of History at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. It's been really great to speak with both of you today about the morning show. Thank you so much for making time.